Chapter 17. Back on the Water. Brannis stifled a yawn. The biting air helped, but could not overcome the fact that dawn was hours off and he had slept little. He clanked as softly as he walked, his armor muffled by the layers of fur that kept it from shining gold in the lamplight. The falling snow helped muffle the world. Scar Harbor streets were lit well enough to walk safely by, but Brannis's concern was more for stumbling on the cobbles than robbery. He pulled a rented handcart with their belongings as he accompanied Soria to the docks.
"The army coddled you something awful, didn't they?" Soria teased. "Some of us have to wake when a job needs doing."
She carried a satchel on the pretense of lightening Brannis's load, but had she sat in the cart with it, he would hardly have noticed the difference. The docks were the lowest land in the city, and there was a downhill grade that was nearly imperceptible. That is, unless you were pulling 50 gallons worth of luggage in a wheeled cart, in which case it seemed a form of magic. All those seasons spent fighting ogres. Brannis could not stop a yawn from interrupting him. "They prefer not to fight in the dark. When the goblins attacked Rainsdark, I was up the whole night without sleep. And if I recall, you are a coinblade who works when she pleases, and an import inspector who gets paid not to do her job."
"I...
we'll think of a better argument later. Remind me when I wake up."
"I need you awake. Someone left a trail we were meant to follow. There has to be someone watching it, waiting for us to find it. Unless I missed my guess, Poet's Hammer will be the only Kesh-bound ship in port right now."
"So you hope they're the sort who sleep late?" Brannis asked. "I could see how that might be a good guess, sneaks being night-loving sorts and all." Soria gave him a dainty little snort.
"We could only be so lucky. I'm just hoping to catch them off guard a bit, get aboard before they get any ideas about trying to stop us, and maybe ask a few questions about who has gone ahead of us. It's the docks. Someone must have seen Thomas and the girl as they left, or at least know what the last ship bound for Kess was."
They wove their way down the deserted streets. For a long while, the rumble of the cart's wheels and their own footsteps were the only sounds. As they neared the waterfront, they could hear the Katamic washing against the docks and the creaking groans of tethered ships sitting idle in the rising tide. There were men about at all hours by the waterfront, though far fewer than in the daytime. Even the women of the night had since turned in. Longshoremen and warehouse watchmen lounged on crates and barrels. Fishermen readied their boats for the day's run. Drunkards awoke from a night's indulgence to wobble back to a bed.
"Stop and leave the cart here," Soria said.
They passed near a run-down tavern frequented by sailors and travelers. Brannis looked to the sign and recognized the name, Dogger's Shack, as someplace Kyrus had heard of but had never been tempted to visit. It was the sort of place where pissing in the ale was more of a business practice than an insult to their offerings. Most patrons were too poor to afford even the cheapest unspoiled ales.
"Around here? Someone is going to rob us," Brannis protested.
"If they try, it'll give us an excuse to rough them up a bit for information," Soria reasoned. "Besides, most of the thieves are done with their night's work and off to sleep the day away."
"With the value of our gear and the gold you have stowed in there, it will be worth someone's while to take up the profession," Brannis replied.
"Well, now that you've announced it to the waterfront at large, certainly. Stay here with the cart, then. I'll go in and have a word with the proprietor."
Soria reached into her back and drew forth one of her daggers. When she reached the tavern, she slid the dagger through a gap where the door fit poorly. Using both hands, she heaved upward and pushed the door in. Brannis imagined she must have lifted the bar from the outside. There was a cry of alarm from within, but it was cut short when the door closed. Brannis sighed and shook his head.
"This is her element. I can let her handle herself."
He turned his attention to his own situation and began scanning the area. It had been a still night for the most part, and the magic of Liad's armor was keeping him warm enough, but a gust chilled his uncovered ears and made him shiver. Although his first thought was to rummage through the cart to find his helm, prudence overrode his discomfort. The whole reason he was bundled up without the helm in the first place was to be a bit less conspicuous.
Armor was rare enough. The demonic helm of his kit was both a masterwork and a terror, and it would make him impossible to overlook. A sudden crash of wood from within the tavern had Brennus turning toward the door before he stopped himself. Unless he heard pistol fire, he was intent on remaining out of her way. She was accustomed to this sort of thing, he knew. He brushed away the snow from his hair and pulled up the hood of his cloak, tucking it tight against his ears. The blow to his head stunned him. Brennus found himself on his hands and knees before it even registered that someone had caught him by surprise. He put an arm up to protect his head and felt a gentle tap against his armor. It might well have been an ogre assaulting him for all that it would have mattered to the armor's runes. It would have felt the same. Brennus curled up and got both arms protecting his head before attempting to rise. He felt something, a hand most likely, pressing into his back and blow after blow raining down against his gauntleted hands and plated arms. Whoever his assailant was, he weighed far less, not enough to keep Brennus down. Just as Brennus was about to regain his feet, another body slammed into his, bowling him over. The second man ended up atop him. He heard more footsteps rushing his way. Brennus wiped his hand across the back of one of his gauntlets, causing spikes to rise up from the magical metal. The decorum of wearing armor in polite society had caused him to keep the spikes retracted, since he had discovered the trick. He managed to keep his wits about him to repeat the process on the other glove, and even up the forearm of his left arm.
"Don't let him draw his blade," one of the attackers called out.
It had been said in a low shout, meant to carry just the length of the brawl, and not quite to the ears of any roaming constables that might have been about.
"Bugger's tougher'n a mule for beating," another complained.
Brennus lashed out, catching one with the armor spikes and sending him cursing. The thought of drawing Avalanche seemed a good one if he could manage it. It was an unbefitting weapon for a brawl, but outnumbered against armed opponents, it was forgivable. He tried to reach across his body, but there were now at least three attackers pinning him to the ground. He tried to call out for help, but someone put a hand over his mouth.
"Hey, what are—"
The voice was cut off. The soldier in Brennus knew the sound of a blade driving into flesh. He heard a body slump to the ground.
"Somebody sti—"
Another attacker's words were lost in a pained cry. Brennus felt the body shift atop him. He thrashed free of one grasp, raking backhand with his gauntleted spikes. It bought him enough time to pull Avalanche free of its sheath. Brennus levered one assailant away and flung him like a horseshoe. The man landed across the road on an angled roof of a warehouse, where he slid to an edge and fell. At last, Brennus was able to gain his feet. To his surprise, his rescuer had not been Soria as he had initially guessed. Rakashi stood 3 paces away, his half-spear stained with blood in the lamplight. There were a dozen or so men still standing, fumbling about to draw bladed weapons as they dropped their clubs and drew back from the Takalish scholar.
"We can solve this without further bloodshed. Please, leave us," Rakashi said.
Brennus turned to look at him. The choice of words sounded odd. He and Rakashi had just slain 3 of their opponents, yet by his words, Rakashi had made them seem the weaker side. Brennus had not been the only one to gather that impression either, as the men fanned out to surround them. Rakashi took a step closer to Brennus and turned to keep eyes to all directions, though Brennus knew that Rakashi's patched eye saw the ether and needed no aid in seeing all around.
"Put that there sword down and walk away, mister," one of the assailants told him. "Ain't no trunch coming tonight to pull your arse out safe. We're taking this one alive, but we ain't paid to keep your guts in ya."
Rakashi lowered his half-spear until the tip touched the cobbles and bowed his head. Brennus realized his game. He wants to lure them in. Deception in the cause of combat. The honor of a warrior, not a knight. Win, then tell the tale how you like. Brennus lowered Avalanche, careful to keep the tip from driving into the street like a dragon's claw should he mimic Rakashi's stance.
"What do you want with me?" Brennus called out to them.
From the corner of his eye, he saw a figure lurking in the doorway of Dogger's shack. He fought back a smile as Soria slipped unnoticed behind the circling thugs.
Come with us and we won't out you more than we have to, the apparent leader called back.
They backed Brennus and Rikashi toward a warehouse wall with no door. Brennus was careful to keep any of them from circling around to where they would spot Soria. He caught Rikashi's gaze, and the two of them shared a small nod. They waited. Soria's blades took two thugs in the back before they knew they had been trapped. As the would-be hunters became aware that their status had changed to prey, they panicked. Backing away from Soria led them straight into the waiting blades of Rikashi and Brennus. The short swords and daggers the men had carried as secondary weapons proved too short to threaten the reach of Avalanche or Rikashi's half-spear. Brennus waved Avalanche back and forth to keep the men at bay, but Rikashi was not so reserved. He fell upon them with brutal efficiency. The thugs were unskilled combatants, and simple feints opened their defenses entirely as they danced to Rikashi's lead. Two strokes seemed his preference, one to the gut, a fatal wound but a slow one, and one to the neck. Heads rolled free of bodies as he finished off one adversary after another. After her first two kills, Soria eschewed the use of her daggers. Brennus winced as she narrowly avoided vicious swipes of dagger and sword. He knew her shielding spell ought to protect her, but could not help himself. Her opponents were not so well protected from her strikes. Bone crunched audibly with each of her strikes. She played no games with her enemies, crushing ribs and skulls. Brennus held two at bay, uncertain how best to end a fight without getting soaked in blood. His attackers decided for him. Seeing their companions die and a clear path behind them, they turned and ran. Brennus was not inclined to chase them down snow-covered streets. He was less fleet of foot in his armor, and the thugs' sudden flight caught him off guard to their advantage of several paces. A pair of daggers ended their escape before they had managed to round the nearest corner. One each to the back, and both men fell to the ground, moaning in agony. Soria jogged over to retrieve her weapons from the fallen men. Brennus grimaced and looked away just in time to hear the cracking necks as she finished them off. "We need to get away from here," Brennus said as she came back. "We cannot afford to be delayed by the city guardsmen who come to investigate."
"One of them implied that the guardsmen were bribed away," Rikashi said.
Further discussion was interrupted by clapping. The three of them turned to see a giant Keshi with a single-bladed war axe tucked into the crook of his arm. He was bare-chested in spite of the freezing air, and looked not the least bit concerned by it. He stood at the head of a group of 10 or so other Keshis, all armed with hand axes.
"It seems we arrived too late to save you," the mountainous Keshi said to them, his accent thick. "I am Captain Jorn Kaysen of Poet's Hammer. We hear fighting and come. I think it is our passengers, maybe, and I am right."
"Captain Kaysen," Brennus called out as he sheathed Avalanche and walked toward the man. "I'm sorry for the inconvenience. I suspect this matter will detain us here a while."
"No time for that," Captain Kaysen replied. "Get you things and get aboard."
He turned to his men and gave them instructions in Keshi. They moved at once for the bodies.
"What did he say?" Brennus asked Soria quietly. "They're going to drag the bodies into the harbor. With the snow, I think it might serve to buy us time before anyone realizes what went on. Well, anyone important, at least. I'm sure there are plenty of folk about tonight who are very carefully not seeing what's going on right now. They'll have stories to tell years from now, but be dumb as a feathered hat if anyone comes asking later today."
Brennus took the handcart and pulled their belongings down to Poet's Hammer's berth. Sailors met them there and carried their belongings aboard without question. A few of the sailors were from Mongrel Kesh, smaller, thinner, and darker skinned than the rest, from blood that had been mixed more times than anyone bothered to count. The Mongrel Keshi, those from the north of the Empire, were the ones more often seen outside its borders. The remainder of the crew was bigger, more muscular, and fairer skinned. The southern Keshi kept more to themselves and took pride in their purity of bloodlines. Like the sorcerers of Kadrin, pure blood paid dividends in producing more extreme traits, in this case, size. The southerners also seemed more inclined to forego precautions against the Akkadian weather. Captain Quezon returned as Brannis and Soria were settling in. Rikashi had come aboard as well, along with a heavy pack filled with his belongings, but he was not yet officially a passenger. Brannis meant to remedy that.
"Captain, thank you for all your help," Brannis greeted the man. "I understand our passage was already arranged, but I would like to add one more."
"The Takalishman. If he pays, he sails. Good fighters always welcome. Make up mind fast, though. We do not wait to 7 bells to leave, or even 5. We sail now. I can find my way across harbor even with the half tide," Captain Quezon said.
"We'll pay. Just get us under sail. Actually, I want to know how much Lord Harwick is paying you," Soria said. She took up a position between Brannis and the captain. Akkadians might expect a woman to be subservient to her man, but the Keshi captain seemed nonplussed.
"I intend to buy you away from him," Captain Quezon laughed.
"This trip makes me a rich man. Twice I get a new price, better than the last. I picked a time to be in Scar Harbor, yes?"
"Someone hired you before Lord Harwick?" Brannis asked. He moved up to stand beside Soria. He was not quite prepared to cede leadership to her entirely. Quezon nodded.
"For a price, I will even tell you who. While at sea, you have no fear someone else will pay me more."
The captain had a disarming smile for such a large man. He piloted them through the sandbars that guarded Scar Harbor at low tide, and out into the open Katamic. No harbor master had given them leave to go, but there were no ships in port that seemed inclined to chase them. All the while, sailors kept about the deck, sweeping it clear of snow as it fell from a storm that could not tell it was still only autumn. Safely out to sea, the crew began to settle into a routine, and one of the mates took over at the helm. As the passengers went to see about their accommodations, Captain Quezon pulled Brannis aside.
"Your girl, she is a Cardia?"
the captain asked, putting a hand on his shoulder. Despite the cold, the man was sweating and stank of ale. Only the copious fresh air kept the reek from being unbearable in the close quarters.
"Yes, but Keshi raised," Brannis confirmed.
"Ah, I hear it in her voice. I hear too that she is Tejuan. Is that true also?"
"Yes, I think your men saw some of her handiwork. The ones who died with no great gash out of them and with their heads attached, those were her doing," Brannis said.
"Good. We find pirates. I know I have 3 more warriors on my ship," Quezon said.
The captain looked about with a paranoid glance before leaning in closer and lowering his voice.
"I have one more question. I must know one way or two way. Are you Akkadians from Kadrin or Azat?"
Brannis tensed. If Jorn Quezon was twin-born, he was likely Gelkin. If he did not know whether Brannis and Soria were Kadrin or Azatian, he certainly had not been told their identities.
"Same plan as with Rashan."
"Kadrin, is that a problem?" Brannis asked.
He disliked his odds against the massive Keshi in a wrestling match, but there were 2 companions he could fall back on in case of violence. There was no upside to be had in lying and being thought a Zatian. Worse, it was implausible that anyone would go to the trouble of starting a bidding war over the fate of an Azatian twinborn.
"You had the chance of lie, Kadrin. You did not. I might have job for you one day, maybe."
Captain Quezon shrugged.
"Knowing Kadrin's might be good idea."
"Eyes inside Gelk? I could pay you a great deal if there is a traitor behind that shaggy blonde beard of yours, Captain."
A white stone monolith, blocky and little adorned, was stationed at one side of the plaza. The only windows it had were high above the ground, and mere slits, too small for even a child to squeeze through. Most of those who came and went by the wide stone stairs were well-dressed Takalish natives bearing parcels. The lettering above the entrance was foreign, but it did not take any knowledge of Takalish to puzzle out that it was a bank. Tanner's emergence was enough to warrant a second look from passers-by. He was grubby and travel-stained, white-skinned, and carrying himself with a swagger unbefitting a gentleman. Had he gone in armed, as was his habit, he would have caused more than a fair stir among the bank's guards, and likely would have landed himself in jail.
He quick-stepped down the stairs to where Stalyard stood, waiting with his gear.
"Have we delayed our task quite long enough?" Stalyard asked as he handed Tanner his sword belt. "These moneylenders put us half a day's ride out of our way."
"Worth every minute," Tanner replied. He buckled on his sword and felt all the safer for it.
"Besides, I think we're going to find that we're ahead of the game. I got the kid to tell me where they were heading before your friend kidnapped us.
Well, me. I guess the boy was going with him either way."
"A precaution. Captain Zane wished to ensure you held to your end of the bargain."
"He always holds to his," Stalyard said. He handed Tanner his Errol-made pistol and the leather sash that held his spare bullets.
"Don't mind me being skeptical of liars vouching for one another. You pirates have reputations too, you know. He'd have been better off taking the deal as I presented it to Kyrus. Give him the staff, and I think he'd have a good chance of beating Rashan in a fight."
Tanner slung the sash crosswise over his shoulder and tucked the pistol into his pants.
"Yes, perhaps. Then we would have Kyrus and the staff of Galen instead of a demon.
Better.
Still not good. I place my wager on Jinzan fair because, should I bet against him, I lose either way," Stalyard reasoned. "As for you, I had not expected you were the type to patronize banks. It seems a gamble in itself to one who flouts laws with such abandon as you."
"Hey, keep that quiet," Tanner replied. "It's not like we're the only ones around who can speak Akkadian. As for my gamble, banks provide a few services you can't get anywhere else. For instance, I can leave them names of associates who can draw on my deposit, in case I die with my money in their hands. Let's just say I don't have a real good feeling about this whole venture."
Their horses were hitched at the far side of the plaza. Once they had retrieved the animals, they departed the city, heading west. It would be days still before they caught up with Jade and Zane's path, even if the boy's guardian kept to it. They rode together across the silent, icy landscape. Stalyard broke the silence in mid-afternoon, with a few quips about the locals, but Tanner answered with nothing but a sidelong glare. Tales of his adventures at sea were interesting, but Tanner managed to keep from showing interest.
"You ever live on a farm, Stalyard?" Tanner asked, in response to an unrelated query about card games.
"Interesting choice to break your silence with."
"No, I grew up with boats and fishing. I had sea legs before I could walk on land," Stalyard replied.
He brought his horse to within arm's reach of Tanner's, as the promise of engaging in conversation loomed.
"Well, neither have I, but I've met a lot of farm folk in my time. Army attracts them like crows. They taught me about the animals they raise, how they have to avoid, you know," Tanner trailed off.
"Is this some jest about improprieties with the animals?" Stalyard asked, clearly confused.
Tanner snapped his head to face Stalyard directly.
"No, Brian Brain. I'm trying to say I might need to kill you, and I'm not in the habit of killing friends. Keep that in mind if it ever comes down to a choice of what happens to me in Vaedrus. Maybe you get the chance to slip me loose. Maybe you hear about the order to kill me and do something about it. I can see that you come out ahead here. I've got more coin than Zane, if that's what you're after. Play it the other way, gambling man, and you'll lose."
Tanner unlimbered his sword in its sheath, but did not take it in hand. He gave Stalyard one more look before returning his attention to the road. Stalyard took heed and moved his horse out of sword's reach.
"Mr. Tanner, I do think you must have been piecing those words together in your head for hours."
"Bravo!
This is more like what I expected from a nefarious coinblade when I agreed to accompany one. You have me out of my element. Now is the time to press an advantage. Of course, you assume that I would not best you with swords, or simply slit your throat in the night. I am, after all, a pirate."
Stalyard spread his arms wide at the astonishing admission.
"I sleep lighter than you might think, and you wouldn't want to be on the wrong side of my blade," Tanner replied.
"Maybe you're some slick-oiled blade with the dregs you sail with, but you're just a sailor at heart. Pick a navy ship out there. There's as good a chance as not they've got a man your equal with a saber.
Me? In the whole Cadran Empire, when they had a knight they need taught sword fighting, they send him to me. I wouldn't be winded by the time you bled your last."
I am having difficulty with something. I cannot tell if you are just acting the braggart for your own pride, or if you are trying to goad me to challenge you. I think I will take my time to think for now, Stalyard said.
When the time comes, pirate, just moo. So long as your friends keep me locked up, I'm ready to butcher you.
With Tanner's threat casting a pall over the ride, they managed to pass the hours in silence. They ate in the saddle without slowing their pace. The only hint of a break in their standoff was when Tanner turned them southwest at a crossroads. Stalyard had seemed ready to comment, but a stern glare from Tanner forestalled him. As evening approached, they came upon a tiny village, a dozen buildings clustered around a crossroads, with a cobbled town square where the roads met.
You knew this was here? Stalyard inquired.
It was the first words either of them had spoken since Tanner's final threat.
Yeah, I know this part of Takalia a bit, Tanner said.
He climbed from his horse and shook loose stiff muscles that fought to continue forming the shape of a horse's back. There was a hitching post in front of an inn, the largest structure in the village with no close second. Tanner tied his mare to it and walked around to the side of the building rather than approaching the entrance. Stalyard followed suit once his own gelding had been hitched.
What is this? Stalyard asked.
There was a small area tucked between the inn and the dry goods store next door, where there was a square of flagstones laid out, perhaps 4 paces across. It met with neither the road nor either building. At each corner, just off the edge of the square, was an iron pot. Nearby, on the wall of the inn, there was a rack of wooden swords under a small awning.
A shrine of some kind.
There's a sword school nearby.
It's not a religion here like it is there, but it's not far off from the Safshan teachings, Tanner explained.
Silver in each bowl, and we could have use of the wooden swords for a duel. The inn would keep half, the other half goes to the school.
You wish a sporting contest, then?
Stalyard's voice brightened to its usual cheery hue.
For gold in each bowl, they'd let us duel with steel, Tanner said. If we both pay our own money, they'd let us kill one another on these stones. Blameless, legal, even honorable.
Tanner walked over to the rack of wooden weapons.
But you would have us contest with wooden blades, of course, Stalyard said.
He walked up behind, but Tanner knew by the sound that he did not come within a blade's reach, were he to whirl and draw his sword.
I haven't held a wooden sword since I was 10, and I'm not about to change that now. I don't teach that way. I don't fight that way.
Tanner dug a hand into his purse, coming out with 2 100-darshi gold coins. He held them up as he turned to face Stalyard. A small crowd was beginning to gather as word of 2 armed strangers near the dueling square spread among the inn guests and the locals.
Friendly match with bare steel? My blade only draws blood when I want it to.
Tanner fanned the 2 coins out between outstretched fingers, letting the pirate and the crowd alike see his intent. All language gaps pushed to the side. Stalyard's smile faltered. It was replaced by a false smile, which only held up briefly before succumbing to its more sincere predecessor's fate. He waggled a finger in Tanner's direction.
Tonight, I think not.
He turned the waggling finger to point Tanner's way.
You have had a bad day.
Stalyard nodded once emphatically, then headed for the front door of the inn. The crowd's disappointment was palpable, but no one was willing to openly question his bravery in public. That would have been begging for a challenge to the accuser. Tanner took the 2 coins securely in hand once more. He was about to stuff them back into his coin purse when he noticed one of the men in the crowd wearing a pendant that marked him as the school's proxy, the one who collected the offerings that were left. He was an elderly Tikalishman, with a fringe of white hair and a bent frame that looked as if it might have held some real muscle in bygone years. Tanner caught the man's eye and approached him. He pressed the 2 coins into the man's palm and closed his hands around them.
Thank you, Tanner told the old man, using 2 of the only Tikalish words he had learned from Rakashi.
The Katamic was in an angry mood, or so it seemed to Brannis as he tried to read, while the ship tossed and rolled. He found himself in a near-constant state of nausea, for as soon as the ship would hold still long enough for his innards to acclimate, Poet's hammer would drop once more,
Everything in the cabin was well made to resist the habits of a fickle sea, except for him. Even the desk's stool was nailed in place.
You can't possibly be absorbing anything from those, Soria commented.
Brannis turned to see her lounging on the bed, stretched out under the swinging lamp's erratic light.
You're dead tired, and the pages are moving more than your eyes are across it.
I would let you read from Juliana's copy of the Piece of Talax, but you already said you needed time to set things in order first. If you changed your...
No, Soria cut him off. I was just thinking that we might put these rough seas to some more pleasurable use.
She gave Brannis a wicked smile and patted a spot next to her on the bed. Brannis lowered his head until he could just see her from below his brow and stared.
You jest, he replied.
Before the protestation he knew was coming, he waved a hand in her direction.
I know, you always jest, but not about that.
I have a demon who could have my throat in his grasp at any moment. There is only so much Kairos can do with Rashaan watching him, so it has to be me who learns all this.
Brannis gestured to the tubes filled with Lord Harwick's notes.
Well, at least come get some sleep, then. You can't deny you could use it, Soria said, propping herself up on an elbow.
Her armor lay discarded in a corner. It was cool in the cabin, but she was wearing nothing but her wrapped undergarments. Much as I would like to, if I sleep now, I would wake Kairos.
He should...
Yes, maybe he should be able to sleep through it, but probably not. Just let me work while I can, and worry about sleep when I collapse from exhaustion. Soria let out a disgusted sigh.
Fine.
She crossed the tiny cabin and reached past Brannis for one of the tubes, planting a kiss on his head as she leaned over him. What are you planning to do with that? Brannis asked. He watched her unstopper it and shake the contents out onto the bed.
You brought little else along that's worth reading, and hard as it may be to believe, I know this stuff too, and I've been at it longer than you, Soria replied.
She started leafing through the papers and shuffling them about the bed. Well, fine. Just use it to protect yourself, though. I do not want you thinking of coming to rescue me. There is nothing in there that would have you kill Rashaan for me, or Harwick would have mentioned it, Brannis said.
Hey, maybe it's you,
Soria pointed to Brannis, the actual Brannis sitting in the cabin with her and not the Kairos Brannis that he kept referring to.
Maybe this big, squishy pile of muscles here will need saving, not the demon-hunting twig of a twin of yours.
Fine, you win. Be careful. Do whatever you want. You always do anyway. Brannis said. Thank you, he added quietly. Soria smiled and found a place to start reading.